Welcome to Two Guys, a Girl and a Movie podcast with Adam, Lee and Josie, your hosts, taking an analysis of some beloved movies, both blockbuster and lackluster. Grab a bowl of popcorn and see if their collective score and analysis matches your views. It's time for Two Guys, a Girl and a Movie podcast.
Hello and welcome to Two Guys, a Girl and a Movie podcast. My name is Adam.
I'm Josie.
And I'm Lee.
Oh, it didn't work.
What didn't work?
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me no more. Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me.
We all now need to get massages on our necks.
That was very, very clever, Adam.
Thank you. Thank you.
A little delayed, but very clever.
A little delayed.
Yeah. Could have gone a bit smoother.
In typical Adam using tech.
I was like, what is he going to do?
I thought we had licensing issues and stuff.
Look, I'm letting it slide for this one.
So for all copyright issues, please see Adam.
Look.
That's A-D-A-M.
Yeah. So check us out on all forms of social media. We're on X, Instagram, mainly Instagram and Facebook.
Wait,
and
surely we should have like done this bit and then when we announce what the movie is, then play it.
Yeah, I was just about to say, so with that particular intro in mind, I think it's very well known that we are now doing a pod on The Princess Bride, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that was the worst joke ever.
At Two Gag Pod. We do a lot of like polls on Instagram and stuff like. Also, let us know if there's anything you want us to talk about or movies that you love that you want to hear us talk about. Give us a like on the podcasting platforms as well. Is this a Josie pick? Who's picking this one?
I think this is all of us.
Yeah, this is an all pick. We all agreed on this. We all agreed on this movie. This was a hey, why don't we do this? Someone suggested why don't we do this? And we all went fuck okay. Yeah, this is great.
All right, cool. Instead, let's get Josie to do all the talking part.
For fuck's sake.
We're doing Night at the Roxbury.
Yeah. Night at the Roxbury.
What's the timestamp right now?
2 minutes and 28.
It took us 2.5 minutes to get to the name of the movie.
I think the song that everyone knows.
Yeah, that was a bit of a bang. Yeah, if you didn't guess what it was from the song, like.
Yeah, I mean that song is iconic to the movie, right?
I can also edit it so I don't fuck it up the first time I try to play it. Or should I leave that in?
I like it.
Leave it in.
Cool.
Okay, so the summary is two dim-witted brothers dream of owning their own dance club or at least getting into the coolest and most exclusive club in town, the Roxbury.
Yeah.
1998 it came out.
It did.
All right. Okay. Each person's relationship with the movie. Josie, keep going.
Okay. There's a bit to this. So my sister and I, we watched it when we were younger. I can't remember when, but I remember when I was about 18 or 19, I started to have this crush on a guy that I worked with in hospitality. And we started to talk, when we were at work about how much I loved a night at Roxbury. He also thought it was a great time. It was Valentine's Day and I went to his house.
Yeah, it was. And yeah, you did.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, and he gave me the soundtrack, the CD soundtrack to Night of the Roxbury.
He gave you a Night at the Coxbury.
He tried to hold it in. But unfortunately, yes, he did.
Wow. fuck.
We're gone.
Josie confessions here on the pod.
But anyway, the next day I
was about to say the soundtrack's actually a really good gift.
It is.
There's so many good songs. It's, on
and this. Because of that, okay. So the next morning,
because of that, you put out.
No, the next morning I was so happy for multiple reasons, as we've just discovered, that I put the CD into my car. I like cranked up What Is Love. And I didn't I was so happy. I was just cranking along to it that I went straight through a school zone doing a 70 when it's 40 and almost lost my license due to it.
This is taking some turns.
Unlike a driving.
You know what, guys?
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us. It has been a lot of fun.
So yeah, so that is my relationship with the movie. I loved it so much that I almost lost my license because of it.
You'd seen it before he gave you the soundtrack though.
Yeah, yeah. So that's how we like started to talk in quite a bit, because I was saying how much I loved the movie, and so that was the way that he was like, yeah, I would listen. I listen to you. You mean a lot to me. Here's the soundtrack.
Smooth.
Yeah, real smooth. I'm really sorry about that, by the way. It came in my head when you guys just when you started talking about it, and I'm like, how do I slide this in?
Nah, you got me good, man. My relationship with this movie is quite interesting. So 1998, I was in year 12, I was 17 years old. I didn't see this movie for a while until it came out on video, and even a little bit more after the fact. But we got Foxtel in my early teens, and I used to watch a lot of Saturday Night Live.
Ooh,
and I was a big fan of like the Chris Kattan, Will Ferrell era of Saturday Night Live as well. And it was around this time, like when I was young, like I think maybe I was 12 when it came out, I was a massive Wayne's World fan.
Yep.
So when a lot of these SNL movies started becoming more frequent, I was pretty keen for it. When they did this movie, because I quite like the skits of the characters that they played, I like the skits so much in Saturday Night Live, I'm like, this movie will be shit because they're going to overdo a good thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I didn't think it'd be any good. Mm-hmm. I saw it well after the fact on video, and I really enjoyed it, and I guess ate humble pie. But ever since then, it's been like, it's an easy watch. It's a fun watch. I really like Will Ferrell as well, but Will Ferrell back then is not the Will Ferrell we know now.
100%.
Yeah,
but yeah, I really enjoyed it, but I didn't see it until long after the fact, whereas some of the movies that were a bit more here or there, I've given a chance to that I probably shouldn't have.
Well, the Chris Kattan and Will Ferrell era of SNL was obviously a little bit after the Mike Myers and the Dana Carvey SNL sort of
Sandler
era.
And all that. Yeah. So see, they'd replay those on off days on Fox.
Yeah, yeah.
Cell.
So this is like this is almost the new era of the new era or the newish era of SNL, right?
But that's when you had like Molly Shannon, who's in this. Tim Meadows used to pop up in a lot of things. Yeah, yeah. Meadows isn't in this.
No, which is surprising. Considering obviously, considering the amount of SNL stuff that's in here or the amount of SNL.
He's in almost all the others that follow.
Yeah, yeah, correct.
He even, he was obviously the lead in Ladies Man, which was his character I actually think is quite a fun movie.
I love the fact that Tim Meadows pops up in random things.
He's great.
He's fantastic.
Yeah,
And I really, really like him. I really like him in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He does a really good job.
Oh, he's so good in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Yeah,
I love him in Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story.
And in Mean Girls, he's really good as well.
He's not in this movie, so we should probably stop talking about him.
Sure.
That's my relationship with the movie. What do you got, Lee?
So I was 12 when this came out. And it's funny actually, because I remember this like very, 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 very specifically and very, very vividly. And I'm going to do a quick shout out to my cousins who live in Sydney, Laurie, Emmy, and Samuel. And the reason why I'm giving
them. Do any of them listen?
Yes, they do actually.
Oh, okay. I'm always so surprised.
And the reason why is because.
Did your friends listen, Josie?
Yes, and yeah, there's a couple, not many. I think our listeners are mostly your friends and your family.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that guy.
And that guy.
And that guy. So a shout out to my cousins. And the reason why it stands out for me is I remember flying over to Sydney to visit my cousins over in Sydney. Mm-hmm. And I remember being there. And I remember my cousins in the car talking about this Night of the Roxbury film and quoting it incessantly, right? They were quoting it. And like when I'm saying quoting it, I mean basically every single time someone would say something, they'd be like, no.
Yes.
Right. And just Roxbury quotes and Emilio and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And it was incessant Night at the Roxbury quoting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Would have been about the year 1999, 2000 that I went over for it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I hadn't seen it yet and I watched it when I was over there because I'm like, what are you guys talking
about?
What
are you on about?
And they're like, this is a movie. You need to watch this movie. And I watched it and I'm like, oh my God, this is fantastic.
Were they big club guys?
No. They were all around my age.
Okay. So when you came of age, were you a big nightclub guy?
Well, not really. I wasn't. And the reason why I say I wasn't is I've never really been a big drinker. So I found that when I sort of turned 18, instead of going to clubs, I started working in clubs.
Okay, I worked at bars.
Right,
and pubs.
So I worked.
If you don't drink, you're at nightclubs. You're in for an annoying
night. I worked at a lot of nightclubs.
Preaching, man. When I was 18, all of my friends kept being like, "Oh my god, you're so lame. You're not coming out." Now they realise being sober, going to a club, why sucks. I would go.
Look, home. I mean, I've been to I used to go to clubs as sober all the time, and it's a thing. But mm-hmm. yeah, like I said, I found myself working at nightclubs more than going to nightclubs.
Okay, so
yeah.
None of us are relevant to these people. Josie, though, you love to dance.
I do. I love a good
boogie. So nightclubs have that appeal for you. See, I like to drink and party, but I can't dance and don't like dancing because I just can't.
Hang on.
And I feel like an idiot. What?
Hang on.
What?
We've worked together. You've seen me dance. You know I can.
Okay, but do you go to... I don't feel a nightclub is going to give you the space to cut the rug you need.
I don't know. I cut the rug pretty good.
You are a fucky. I love your dancing more than hard. Anyone.
I need to find the right club to go to because I don't like the drum and bass techno type thing, which is quite often what is at clubs.
Most times at clubs, it's... popular songs with just a techno beat in the background.
Yeah. I don't know about that because being sober and going to those type of clubs that have techno type of beats plus so many people like bumping into you and crowded, not my vibe. But the other week when I went to a club and it was playing Disney songs and High School Musical songs, I was in my element, and if every club was like that, I would go clubbing every weekend.
So you like it when nightclubs do lame nights?
That is correct.
Yeah, okay.
That's the Josie energy.
Mind you, though, sort of going back to when I was 18, 19 and actually hitting clubs on the odd occasion, I mean, we're talking about, you know, back when it was 2004, for argument's sake. I mean, most bars were watering down their Midori shakers and their vodka Red Bulls anyway.
Putting grenadine and Smirnoff ice and things like that.
Yeah, double blacks. Smirnoff double blacks.
Yep, I go to nightclubs with mates and they'd be like, oh, no, man, you got to dance, man. That's how you get the chicks. And, like, we go out to the dance, we'll be like a circle of just douchey-looking dudes, and they're all dancing. I'm like, man, fuck this. I'm going to go hang at the bar.
They're just sword fighting in a circle.
The cool thing that you would have liked, Lee, is that back when I first started going to bars and pubs and clubs, man, you still smoke in there.
Yeah, I remember. I was there.
Fuck that.
Just fucking a beer in one hand and a smoke in the other.
Yeah, I remember.
I cannot think of anything
clubs
worse.
Have gone a long way since then, and I actually
No, but the thing is, now that they don't allow people to smoke, they just flood it with fucking smoke machines, which is probably worse.
Which is ironic, right?
Yeah.
Or people sneak in vapes now.
No, I do remember I was actually still working in clubs and bars and stuff, and I was still going out in times when you could still smoke in clubs and bars and stuff.
And that's how you met your beautiful wife.
Oh, no, I wasn't smoking in the bar
at
the time.
No, I meant working at
them. Yes, but that's how I met my wife.
We've gone well off the fact, though. Night at the Roxbury is about a couple
of back together, Adam.
Who liked a club. We have ourselves five categories that get a score out of 5 for the rating of the movie. We can give it either a 0, a 0.5, or a full 1 mark. We got basic casting. Let's not go forever, Lee.
We're going to move... Before we do that, let's get into the director.
Oh, yeah.
John Fortenberry. He has done lots of TV shows, Ugly Betty, Two Broke Girls, Workaholics, Ballers, just to name it for you.
I love Workaholics.
So yeah,
that is great.
So he hasn't done anything really of note, but he's done a lot of one or two.
What do you mean? Let me finish.
He hasn't done any like major movies.
But
he's done a lot of TV shows, like one or two episodes here and there.
But they're the kind of people that would direct a movie like this.
Yeah, correct.
This is such a nothing movie as much as it's great fun.
We don't normally do this, but I'm going to make very special mention to the producers. So the producers behind this movie were Lorne Michaels, obviously from SNL. People know him from SNL, 30 Rock, Coneheads, Late Night with Jimmy Fallon.
Coneheads was an SNL spin-off. Yep,
of course. But also big ups to Amy Heckerling.
Oh, yeah.
She has solid.
Amy Heckerling needs to be mentioned. I'm sure we'll get into it in fun facts later.
We'll mention her in several departments of this podcast. Yeah.
But Amy Heckerling needs to be mentioned. Clueless, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Look Who's Talking, and Loser.
Yeah.
Just to mention a couple of things that she's done. But yeah, Amy Heckerling needs to be mentioned before we can move any further. Should we get into the cast?
Well, before we get into cast, I think about a quarter of the cast of Clueless is in this movie.
I was going through it and I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know that person. Clueless.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that's Clueless.
Yeah. Score 1. Started off, score 1. And look, Will Ferrell, Steve Buttabi, Anchorman, Elf, Blades of Glory, the other guys. To be honest with you, I know that you mentioned that you're a massive Will Ferrell fan. I'm going to go the other way and say that I am not a massive Will Ferrell fan. In fact, this is probably the only Will Ferrell movie that I can tolerate.
You don't like Anchorman.
I don't like Anchorman.
Step Brothers.
What is wrong with you?
Don't like Step Brothers.
Anchorman, I think, is up with the best comedy.
No, I don't rate it. I've watched it several times. And every single time
even
I watch it.
Even if you don't like Will Ferrell, you've got Paul Rudd. You've got bloody
Steve Carell.
Steve Carell, I thought was the funniest thing I'd ever seen when I saw that movie.
David Koshner.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. The cast is huge, right? And I get it. And I will admit there is one particular scene that I really do like in Anchorman.
Let's save it for the Anchorman pod.
The fight scene is fantastic.
Incredible.
But it's because of all the cameos.
The fight scene's the only good thing about the second movie.
Anyway, Chris Kattan, Doug Butabi, House on Haunted Hill. What Jesus. SNL, obviously. You've mentioned him in SNL.
He's great in SNL.
Undercover Brother. And he's in this really bad comedy about about a mobster called Corky Romano.
I remember that,
So terrible, and I highly recommend that you watch it because it's great. Jennifer Coolidge.
What a babe.
The Hottie Police Officer, American Hottie. Pie, Legally Blonde, Cinderella Story, White
Lotus.
What year
was American Pie?
2001. Jinx.
Michael Clark Duncan, who played the bouncer.
Huge. Completely forgot about it. Hadn't seen him in years, and I was pumped.
And you know what? Green, he's done it. He's obviously gone and had an illustrious career up until the point where he's not with us anymore. But Green Mile, Sin City, Armageddon, to name a few, The Whole Nine Yards, and I know that you
Daredevil.
Want me to mention
he was
that.
Kingpin. Mm-hmm.
He was Kingpin. I did forget about that. Mm-hmm. Richard Grieco, who plays Richard Grieco.
Yeah.
And from 21 Jump Street.
Do you remember when they tried to make him a big star and he did his own movie called If Looks Could Kill?
No.
Oh, there you go.
Okay. Dan Hedaya, who plays Kamel Butabi, the dad.
Clueless.
Mulholland Drive, Clueless. Usual Suspects. He's fantastic in The Usual Suspects, and that's a fantastic movie, which we should probably do.
Buddy, what a movie.
But I saved the best to last. I love him in Commando.
Oh,
just because Commando is such a good film.
Can we do Commando?
Oh, absolutely. Meredith Lynn Scott, who plays the credit vixen. She's actually popped up randomly in lots of things, right?
So she's in Legally Blonde.
Yeah, Hollywood Homicide, Legally Blonde, Forces of Nature. She's in Loser as well. So Colin Quinn has been lots of things. He's the guy who plays Dewey. He's in TV shows basically until the dawn of time.
He's an SNL guy.
Yeah, he's an SNL guy.
He used to do the Weekend Update.
He's the big SNL guy, right?
Yeah.
Gigi Rice, who plays Vivica. Yeah. The John Larroquette show. She's done a lot of TV, but her career never really launched. Mm. And it's the same with Elisa Donovan, who plays Cambie,
who was in Clueless as well.
But she's never really done anything that's really worth talking about.
She did both
about.
The movie and the TV show, didn't she? Cambie.
Yes, well, for Clueless. Yeah. And she was also in Sabrina the Teenage Witch for a little while as well.
I will say, having a career in acting and just doing TV is still pretty good. If you're getting consistent work as an actor, I'll give you all the props,
fuck
man.
It, yeah, yeah
a,
no, but what I mean by doing TV, what I mean
I know
by
what
doing,
you mean. You're not hitting the heights of the likes.
No. What I'm saying is, like, Gigi Rice, for argument's sake, I put it down. She was in the John Larroquette show, which was quite a big show back in the day, but she did a smattering of, like, one episode for Will and Grace and one episode of Hope and Faith and stuff.
Bounced around.
Yeah, she bounced around. A lot of TV shows, but she never landed anything big herself.
Yeah, no main character.
Yeah, correct. And she was doing, and you know how you just get those people that just find themselves sort of washing through that, and then all of a sudden they just stop acting. She's a good example of that, right?
Mm. Yes.
I love Lachlan Munro.
Oh, he is another dude that I'm like, I don't know your name, but in everything, you are great.
So he is that guy that everyone looks at him and goes, who the fuck are you? But I know you from somewhere. Most notably for me, the thing that stands out the most for me is White Chicks.
I was going to say White Chicks with him sniffing the underwear and stuff.
Yeah, Freddy versus Jason,
yeah. Thank you.
Scary movie,
he has a great part. Do you remember a movie called Dead Man on Campus?
Yes, I do.
He is so good in Dead Man on Campus.
So he pops up in random things, right?
Okay, he was in Riverdale and he was the serious dad who becomes like a killer, and it just did not sit well for me knowing him as the comedic actor.
I was just about to say, Lachlan Munro is also one of those actors that's popped up randomly, but he's done a lot of B-grade stuff.
Mm. Yeah, but he's always like the frat boy, like the party animal.
But with that being said, was just about to say his stuff in Riverdale changed that, I think, because I think that it's almost like his big break in the sense that it was a massive TV show and he finally got a solid role.
It was so serious and killerish.
Well, in Freddy vs. Jason, he plays a police officer, which is like, and he's like a young police officer, but again, it was kind of like he was always playing this young kind of frat boy, whereas now, like you said with Riverdale as well, like he has to make these changes because he's getting a bit older.
Of course.
And he can't keep playing that same sort of typecasted role.
And I've got Molly Shannon, who plays Emily Sanderson, obviously.
She is brilliant.
She's great in it.
Yeah, she's
She
awesome.
Makes the movie as far
she
as
She was a massive part of it.
I also love her in Never Been Kissed.
Serendipity.
Yeah, great movies.
SNL superstar. We've talked about superstar before.
When I was looking up on IMDb, the cast and everything, I completely forgot about her movie Superstar.
Yeah.
I used to be obsessed with that when I was younger, and I'm really excited to watch it again.
So me and Adam were talking about that. We both actually – I think this was just before you got here, or you must have been out of the room or something. We were actually just talking about it before going, what did you think of Superstar? And we both went –
well, I never saw it because I didn't like the skits of her doing that on SNL. I'm like, this does not warrant a movie.
I just like, I can't actually remember the movie, but I when I saw the poster, I was like, oh, I used to watch that all the time, but I don't know why.
Yeah.
You could also argue,
if I actually like it.
Like going back, you could also argue the same thing about Night of the Roxbury and the same thing about Wayne's World, right?
No, Wayne's World is amazing.
No. I'm saying that the skit didn't warrant a movie.
True.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, the skit doesn't warrant a movie.
Wayne's World shouldn't have worked as well as it
did. Yeah, true. And Night of the Roxbury, same diff. Like, don't get me wrong, Wayne's World is better.
Free advertising.
Yeah. Yeah. Wayne's World is a better and bigger movie, but yeah, it shouldn't have done as well as it did.
Yeah.
I'm going to make special mention to Chaz Palminteri.
A motherfucker.
Bro, had to. Benny's a deer. And you know what? Ironically, he doesn't get credited in this.
No, and that's what spun me out. He's not even on the IMDb.
Weird? No, he is if you go deep diving for him.
I ain't got time for that.
So he's in The Usual Suspects. I love him in The Usual Suspects.
Bronx Tale,
fantastic film. Josie, you want to talk about a gangster movie? Fantastic.
Gangster.
He's in Oscar with Sly Stallone.
Oh, my guy.
Yeah, your guy.
Not a good movie.
Not a good movie. Poor Hall Junkies as well. Very good movie. Chaz Palminteri, I'm a massive fan of from way back.
He's
I think great.
So good in Usual Suspects.
Yeah,
as
he
well.
Is. He
Wait,
is.
Who is he in this film?
Mr. Zadia.
The nightclub.
Oh, right. Yeah, I love him.
So special mentions, just really quickly. Viveka Paulin, right, is the Porsche girl.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And who is she now?
Will Ferrell's wife.
There you go.
Get fucked.
Yeah, this is how they met.
Yeah. So that's Will Ferrell's wife.
Yeah. And they're still together now, three kids, living their best life.
Kip King, who plays the flower customer, is Chris Kattan's father.
Yep.
Yeah, that's cool.
And he's also, as a bit, if you know your SNL, obviously SNL we're talking about the SNL stuff with Chris Kattan and Will Ferrell back in the 90s. That was majorly headed by the Groundlings comedy troupe. The Groundlings comedy troupe was actually started by Chris Kattan's father.
Oh.
He was the founder of that particular group.
That's cool.
And they're still active now.
That's awesome.
So sorry to ruin fun facts, but yeah, just
thought. No, man. I'm how here for dare you.
I love Twink Kaplan in this. She's the crying flower lady.
Yes, who's also in.
I love her in Clueless.
In Clueless. She is probably me in real life.
Yeah, just crying over fake flowers.
The hopeless teacher.
Yeah. Eva Mendes.
So yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Debut.
For obvious reasons.
Still so hot.
Roy Jenkins, who plays the flower customer, he's in so many things. But he's also he's the guy that Doug checks the card for.
I love whenever right? Doug does that.
But he's actually, as if you didn't know, so he's in The Heartbreak Kid, he's in Movie 43, The Three Stooges. But he's also one of the biggest writers for the Late Night with the Conan O'Brien show.
Oh.
Yeah, so going through his credits and deep diving, that's actually a big part of his career.
What he's been doing.
Yeah. And I saved the best till last. Did you ever watch Superstore?
Yeah. Mark McKinney. I've been waiting all this time.
So Mark McKinney, like I've watched Superstore, right? And yes. I've watched Night at the Roxbury, and I couldn't put the two of them together.
No. Do you know what he is for me?
Who?
He is in the Spice Girls movie.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And the whole time I was like, I know you.
Where do I know you from?
And I was like, okay, Superstore, yeah. And I was like, nope, there's something else I know you from. And here's the reporter in Spice Girl movie.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, cool. Boom. So I didn't recognize him when I watched Superstore, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's obviously been such a long time between.
And I think he's put on a few.
He has. And he's also gotten older.
Yes.
But I never picked the two of them. And then I rewatched Night of the Roxbury recently after I'd watched Superstore. And I'm mm-hmm. like, wait whoa, a whoa, minute. Whoa. What do you mean? And yeah.
There he is.
Mind blown. Boom. Mind blown. Anyway.
And the mum.
And the mum. Oh, yeah. What's her name? Loni Anderson. Barbara Potapi.
What do you think of her?
Oh, she's like a bit doing shit since like the 60s and all that. Like,
Massive TV star.
Yeah, like a massive star. Like them getting her was like a big sort of like.
She's a babe.
Huge, she is a MILF. Easy Street.
Yeah.
Very special mention to her, actually. I forgot to mention. She's in a cracking movie in the 90s called Three Ninjas High Noon.
What a name.
High Noon at Mega Mountain, you'll find it's called, Lee. I remember when you updated the, your Plex and added that to that, because I watched that in an instant, starring a certain
Hulk Hogan.
Hulk Hogan.
Safe to say, I have not seen it.
Do yourself a favor.
Yeah, do yourself a favor. It'll improve your life.
Leave the pod now and go home and watch. It's like the third in the Three Ninjas movie.
Yeah, it's the third one.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm going to continue on. I also gave it a one. I love Will Ferrell. I think he is great. I love so many of his films. When we were talking about doing a comedy the other day, I kept being like, oh, how about we do this? And it's like, oh, no, that's Will Ferrell as well. Do this, because I know that Lee is not a fan. So every time I would, you know, drop a comedy, it would end up being a Will Ferrell one. So he ended up.
Like to point out, and this is just, I'm going to go on record by stating this because we are recording this. If you want to do a Will Ferrell movie, I'm happy to do a Will Ferrell movie.
You'll just roast it.
I will destroy it.
Well, you don't like Will Ferrell and you don't like Adam Sandler. So it's really cutting thin on
basically the entire 90s is written off when it comes to comedies. Out.
And Jim Carrey's okay.
Oh, yeah, I see where you're coming from. I probably agree with that.
We'll touch on Jim Carrey later.
Ace Ventura 2 shit.
Oh, fuck.
Sorry, Jason.
Chris Kattan, I really enjoyed him in this film, but it's quite sad that, he and Will kind of butted heads and you don't really see him much now after this film, because I think he could have been as big as Will Ferrell is now. Molly Shannon, love her. I love her in this. She puts a bit of spice into the film and I think it's great. And all of the other side characters just really, I think everyone brings it in this movie.
Yeah, they do.
Meredith Scott Lynn being the telemarketer girl, but you know, yeah, she's, Lachlan Munro, hilarious. I thought, every scene that he was in, he brought it all.
I want a movie of him in the gym as a gym instructor.
So good.
Guns.
So fucking
big
good.
Time. Jennifer Coolidge could do no wrong. And it was great seeing all those little, side characters like Eva Mendes and Colin Quinn, Mark McKinney.
Yeah. There's epic cameos.
Yeah.
In it, right?
There's some great cameos.
All the Saturday Night Live movies did.
Yeah. They had, especially when you've got Lorne Michaels, producing
they know
it.
Everyone.
You've got so much pull for star power.
Anyone who's been on Saturday Night Live.
And then seeing all of the Clueless cast within this movie as well was a bit hit close to home.
Well, I mean, you know, you take a look at obviously Amy Heckling attached to it, right?
And you go, oh, that's why.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, that's the first thing I did once I saw about the fourth Clueless character. I was like, there has to be some.
The only thing that's really missing is Alicia Silverstone to drive it home.
Or Paul
right?
Rudd.
Or Paul Rudd.
Adam.
I want a 0.5. I love Will Ferrell.
Get the fuck out.
Chris Kattan is really good. I love Michael Clarke Duncan. I wrote the dad from Clueless and the MILF from American Pie. Yep, Molly, I'm just going over what you've all gone over before as well. I popped large for Chaz Palminteri because I remember that character because I will touch on what I liked about that character later on. I think they're all solid names, but they're kind of just goofing around having fun in what is essentially a bit of a nothing movie. So I don't feel like the cast is really, like, it's fun and it's silly, but it wasn't like 10 out of 10. You know what I mean?
It's not supposed to be taken seriously.
Yeah, I know that. Lee.
Was it a big hit when it came out? Do we know? Like, did it?
I would say mild success.
Or is it one of those ones, like a cult film, I guess, where it's built up a reputation?
The thing is,
you kind of
needed to be in on the joke, I think. Yeah. Like, if you weren't a Saturday Night Live fan.
Yeah, I was about to say, you needed to be an SNL fan.
I don't know, because I didn't watch SNL and I love this movie.
No, but
you're
I think...
You're also, what, like 8?
Yeah.
No, what I'm saying is like when it was launched, I think if you weren't an SNL fan, then it was sort of whatever.
It would have been huge in America, pretty mild everywhere else.
Yeah, okay. I reckon that's fair. Yeah.
But I love it. Okay, basic plot and story.
I sadly gave it a 0 because I feel like, there's just not a lot to it. Like, they want to do a nightclub. They go on a bit of a random adventure, but I just think it's such a surface level. There's no real plot. It's just two brothers who like to party and want a nightclub. There's nothing more to it. The synopsis is really, that's true. Boom, done.
It's paper thin, I'll give you that. Yeah. I've gone a 0.5 instead of a 0 there. I said it's a silly Saturday Night Live spin-off movie, and I love a lot of those, but some aren't great. I said this one, though, it's a little bit of a one-trick pony.
Yep.
Like, after the first 10 minutes, you know what you're in for. It's pretty much just a bunch of gags, like a little bunch of spot gags just loosely put together.
Just a string of
It's an hour
skits.
And a half skit.
Which, don't get me wrong, there's other movies I love that do the exact same thing. Some do it better than others. Mm. I think this is a really good fun time. I absolutely love it, but I can only give it a 0.5 a story.
Yep. I'm exactly the same for exactly the same reasons. There's literally nothing to add for it.
You got 0.5?
Yeah, 0.5.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, let's go on to three notable scenes because I think that there's plenty to talk about here.
Oh, look.
The fact that it is a bunch of little spot gags, there are a lot of good scenes, and I'm interested to see how many of us overlap.
So this is going to be interesting because we've talked about a lot about movies that aren't necessarily quotable, and we've also done a lot of movies that there aren't a lot of memorable scenes in it.
Yes.
This is one of those movies that have got both.
See, yep. For me, I don't think so.
Really?
I think the fashion is memorable. I think the soundtrack is memorable.
Of course.
And I think the quotes are memorable, but with the scenes... Meh.
Okay.
I'm surprised.
Yeah.
So am I.
Well, you kick it off, Josie.
Yeah, so I gave it a 0.5 because, as I said, the aspect of the movie, lots of memorable things to it, but I don't think the scenes are memorable themselves.
Okay.
The other aspects are. So the first one I have is Doug and Steve putting the plants in the van. So when they're talking and
he's angry,
he's like pelting
and
him
he's
in
just,
there.
Yeah, and so at first you see Will Ferrell's character like slowly, gently put the first one in, and then Doug's in the background just chucking it, and yeah, always cracks me up. That's it.
Keep in mind, Chris Kattan pretty much speaks like Chris Kattan in this movie.
Yeah,
Will Ferrell's doing that like Bill and Ted style voice,
very slow, like duh.
Like, I just think that, like, we could do this.
Very nice.
My number one scene out of three, I've given a giant number one for notable scenes because I think it's got heaps of scenes that I love and it's memorable because it is just, like, a bunch of gags. It's very simple, but when they're doing their little bopping head along thing and he breaks the window.
Cool.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw that, I pissed myself.
Sorry, did you give it a one?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah, okay. I've written for my first best scenes is the whole damn movie. but no, moving on. The gym scenes.
Oh, dude, I love the gym scenes.
But the gym scenes is more to hone in more the power bar and the energy bar and the nitro bar.
Yes.
And then Craig goes on to talk about how he's worried about their pecs, and it becomes a real serious conversation.
And when
like, we were talking about it the other day,
and when Molly Shannon's there, and he's like, "Nice calves," or like, "Great calves," or whatever.
Yeah,
he
great
says.
Glutes.
Yeah, great glutes. Great glutes.
I used to think that's funny, but since we've been going to the gym the last few years, I find it about 30 times funnier now because like I see douchebags.
You're
at the
like
gym,
yes,
and I'm like, oh man, I see people like that now. They just dress differently.
Yeah.
Joyce, what's your next one?
I also had the head banging scene and breaking the window, but also in the elevator when it's like
slowed
down.
Oh, yes.
The elevator scene is great. And then when they don't actually they just are nice people to the woman that walks
and
in it.
They're like, sup.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
keep going. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got fuck. It's a bit of a broad one, but when they're about to score with the chicks and
they keep doing the pickup lines.
Kattan's still doing just nonstop pickup lines, yeah. But yeah. when Will Ferrell starts doing the ambulance sound, I'm not even going to impersonate it.
And you hear it through the wall with Doug.
Like I was in tears of laughter because I'd forgotten about that scene, and rewatching it now, I was in stitches. That fucking kills me.
Yeah.
It's so pathetic. But
it's
so
good, man.
Yeah, it is good. It is good. Just because it's so cheese, though.
Oh, it's fucking dumb as hell, but so is the movie.
When Steve wakes up Doug with a Twizzler.
Yeah, and then he eats it.
And he's like, "Twizzled you, my friend." Yeah, you totally got me. And then he starts eating the Twizzler afterwards.
He's like, "Dude, those in my nose."
Yeah.
My final one was the wedding. So just pretty much how
the whole wedding.
Yeah, Will Ferrell is with his vows with
hitting
looking,
on the bridesmaid.
Yeah, him looking at Eva Mendes. Doug with the boombox.
It's like a tribute to Say Anything, right?
Yeah, and then my dad's already paid the caterer.
So
line
good.
Just all of the wedding scene.
See, mine's on the back of that, and my final third scene is the Jerry Maguire ripoff.
Oh, yeah, you had me at hello.
They literally do the scene, like, word for word.
With Secret Garden playing in the background.
Yes, the fucking Bruce Springsteen song in the background, which, don't get me wrong, lazy writing, but fuck, it's funny.
Hits the spot.
Love it. Absolutely love it.
I don't think that's lazy writing. I think that's really clever writing because they know, because Jerry Maguire was such a big film.
Yeah, especially around that time. And it was 97,
right? Yeah, something around there. But it was such an important scene and they were just basically ripping it to shit without ripping it to shit.
They play it straight.
Yeah.
That's my third.
That was one of mine. I've also got when Doug comes back to the store with the stationery.
Oh, yeah.
yes. And he's like, little post-it notes because you write smaller than me. Scotch tape in case post-it notes.
Wasn't it Steve that brought it back?
Yeah.
You said Doug. I'm just making sure.
Will
Ferrell reads back.
Steve.
Scotch tape in case the post-it notes loses adhesivity. Mugs that have our names on it. Yours says Doug. And then Doug goes on about setting up a meeting and then asks if Steve can do 12:30. And then Doug unwraps his brand new diary and searches for it and is like, I'm all clear.
And they're like, we should do a meeting to prepare for our meeting.
A pre-meeting?
Yeah, pre-meeting.
Yeah. That whole scene is terrific.
That all you got?
Yep.
Would you score it?
That's one from me.
Yeah, fair.
Because it's just one of those things that it just runs through your head, right? Like, you just think about the movie and then it just bleeds onto more and you start basically replaying the whole movie in your head.
If we were to score quotes, it would be a one for me.
Of course. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Well, the next one is Appeal, and I'm going to kick this off. I've gone a one for Appeal. I love a good comedy. I was a big fan of the skits, especially this on Saturday Night Live. I really like Will Ferrell. I've always dug the movie, but I've watched so many of those late 90s, like Saturday Night Live movies and stuff. Like, yeah, this is one for me.
Is this right in sort of like top five of the SNL skits? Like of that time?
If it's not, it's just out.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. It's a tough man. There was a lot of good going around that time.
So I've always found that SNL for me is very hit and miss.
Yeah.
Like, same. You know, sometimes
some American humor.
Sometimes it's fantastic. It's hilarious. And one of my favorite all time SNL skits, ironically enough, is the Angels, the Outfield, the Josie one. I love that skit, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then there's a lot in it that's
I loved
just terrible.
Alec Baldwin as Trump.
Oh yeah.
I found him hilarious.
As a reprisal role, right? Like, he just kept on coming back and doing it. He did do it very well, though.
He did it fabulous. I gave it a one. 90s comedy, straight away, peak. That is peak interest for me. Love most Will Ferrell movies. So if he's on the poster, I am ready to watch it. And as I said earlier, the soundtrack is fabulous and right up my alley that I have a CD of it.
Yeah, you do.
No kidding.
Oh, my God. So it's one from me.
That easy, hey, Joss.
Give me a CD, I tell you.
The appeal from me is also, is not also, it's actually a 0.5.
What?
The reason why it's a 0.5 is because it took a couple of years for me to watch it. I was too young for SNL at that time.
Yeah.
So I wasn't watching SNL at that time. But what I was also, you know, I didn't realize that it had come out until a couple of years later. And it took my cousins to quote it in the car for me to understand what the hell they were talking about.
Fair.
But since then, obviously, it's become an all-time fave, right?
All right, well, next is the ending, the final, the climax. Do you want to keep going, Lee?
No, you go.
Zero. Even though it's a comedy, it's simple and it's fun, much like what we're talking about with the story, I feel that there's hardly any substance or structure to the movie. You just kind of expect what's going to happen to happen, and it does. And it's not the movie's fault. Now, like, you know, I can't really hold it against it, but I also can't really give it a massive mark.
I'm going to say the exact same. As much as I want to give it a higher score because I love this film, there's not really an ending to it.
No, because the ending as well is a little bit after the wedding, which kind of the wedding could have been the end, but of course they needed that
They needed that club.
And it does all right, but it's also like, okay, we knew this from the start and it wasn't really fleshed out either.
And then it kind of just ends in a way.
So like they meet the club owner, they want to meet back with him, doesn't happen.
And they meet Hottie Cop.
And then it's just kind of like bam, 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 we're out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lee?
I'm going to give it a 0.5.
Yeah, right.
Okay. The reason why I'm giving it a 0.5 is because I like the fact that they tied it up nicely. I like the fact that he ends up with a police officer.
Hottie Cop, yeah.
So it's one of those, it's almost like an ongoing joke where, like, you know, you sort of assume that...
he literally has one scene with her in the entire movie.
I know, but the point is that he automatically assumes that she's hitting on him, right? And you can, as the audience would say...
Like, come on.
She's not. But then all of a sudden he turns around and finds out that she's there at the end. It's a nice little tie-in.
Yeah.
And you can tell that she is interested. So kudos, right?
Yeah.
And he brings it back by saying, I was really looking forward to seeing you on July 1st or whatever it was.
On my court date.
Yeah, yeah. I like the fact that he ends up obviously hooking up with the credit vixen as well because obviously there's a bit of a thing going on.
Yeah, but we all saw that.
I'm a sucker for that happened, like the tying up nicely in a bow. So I'm going to give it a 0.5.
I also wasn't expecting Molly Shannon to turn into a bitch.
That was a good twist.
Well, that's what I was saying. Like, Molly Shannon, like, she gets over... Like, she doesn't get the props that she deserves. She was a hectic character in this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that's our five categories out the way. Let's go on a few miscellaneous categories before we wrap it up. Up to three notable quotes. Let's try and keep it to three. Lee.
Hmm. Hmm.
Lol. Start with you, Lee.
Oh, am I going, am I?
Yeah.
Okay. Look, it sounds good, but I'm getting over a very serious relationship right now, and it's going to take some time to nurse my emotional wounds, and that could take, like, until Saturday.
Okay, I'll see you Saturday.
I love that quote so much.
It is good. I have... Did you just grab my ass?
Motherfucker. That was my first one.
Did you just grab my ass?
That's one of my favorite ongoing jokes in the movie.
And it's like, it's physically impossible for me to be grabbing your ass all the way over here.
Yeah. And then when at the end, he's like, oh, I can't even remember who he was. Like, oh, so-and-so just called. He said he did not grab your ass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I've got that. I've also got the part when they first get into the Roxbury with Richard Grieco and Will Ferrell's like, they were like, hey, how you doing? How you doing? And he's got to like freezes out. Like,
how you doing? What's
up? How you doing? Like fucking.
Oh, hottie overload. Yeah,
hottie overload.
It reminds you of the scene from Wayne's World 2 where Garth's in the bar telling a story. He's like, swing, swing, swing. Like, yeah, just fucking great.
Wayne's World 2 is not good.
Wayne's World 2 is good.
Here we go.
My turn?
Yep.
So anyway, I was standing there waiting to use the payphone.
Yes.
Yeah, he was. Seriously. And this guy who's on the phone turns around and tips his hat like this. And do you know who that guy was? Emilio Estevez.
Emilio.
The Mighty Ducks man. I swear to God. Yeah.
Yeah, that whole bit.
That whole bit.
Yeah.
Emilio.
Joyce?
I just have, what's up?
Okay, cool. I've got Richard Grieco. You see right through me. But he has that deep chat with his dad.
Yeah.
I always like that scene.
Stephen, do you promise to love Emily, comfort her, honor her in sickness and in health as long as you both shall live? My father already paid the caterer. It's such a good line.
It is good.
And the way that he delivered it is so good. You mentioned it before, and as soon as you mentioned it, I was like, damn, you stole my line.
It's such a good bit. That whole scene is great.
I have got one more. I'm going to give you one.
So does Josie first.
Oh,
okay.
Oh, it's okay. No, we've already done like most of it. Proceed.
There you go.
I just had like the, hey, nice bulbs, Emily. Oh, I don't mean that metaphorically.
my last one is, now Stephen, repeat after me. After me.
Yeah, after me.
Very
good. It's so stupid.
Yes, and that's why it's funny.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go quickly around the room, some random fun facts and extras.
You can go.
Okay, Jim Carrey helped with the script, but he went uncredited.
Yep. I saw that. That's great. Apparently a sneaky extra went topless in the background of the backyard party.
Even though it was rated PG.
Can I piggyback off on that?
Yes.
That house and that pool where that party takes place
is
the one from Showgirls with the sex scene in the pool.
Yeah, it was. Party time. Eva Mendes' first cinematic appearance.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I'm going to let you talk about the Chris Kattan and Will Ferrell thing.
So I don't even know if I got the whole story, but Will Ferrell and Chris Kattan had a massive falling out. Was it during this movie or at the end of it?
It was supposed to do with a girl, wasn't it?
It was during it.
And the girl was Amy Heckerling.
So Chris Kattan and Amy Heckerling were doing...
They got together.
What did you call it? Coxbury?
Yeah.
Not the Coxbury. Yeah. So Kattan and Amy Heckerling got together or started a relationship during this movie. And for whatever reason, Will Ferrell had an issue with it.
Yeah.
And him and Kattan completely stopped talking after this. I think Ferrell had already left Saturday Night Live. They didn't see each other for like over a year afterwards. And apparently Kattan had tried to call him and...
I'm pretty sure he says something like, oh, I saw your texts and calls and I just didn't want to talk to you.
I did not want to talk to you. And to this day are still not friends.
Yeah.
So sad.
Do you know what the actual issue is?
So, yeah, apparently it's just obviously Amy Heckerling. So, apparently, I did a bit of a deep dive.
Does this mean that, like, Ferrell wanted Heckerling?
I don't know. It doesn't say. But
as I said, this is where he met his wife.
Yeah, what's the beef?
So, apparently, according to an interview with Kattan, apparently Lorne Michaels pressured Heckerling into having relations with Chris Kattan. And apparently that really soured, because she's a producer behind it. It soured the relationship with Will Ferrell. That's all it was.
Wait, so he pestered her into fucking Kattan?
Yeah.
That's messed up, man.
Relations, Adam.
Relations.
Yeah. He gave her a CD and everything.
Dickhead.
All right.
For a moment, I was like, really? And then I was like, oh, fuck, wait.
Yeah, it was a Night of the Roxbury CD.
Yeah.
Oh, just quickly, before we move forward, I want to do a quick shout-out, because we don't score this, and it would score a huge one if
we did. The soundtrack?
The soundtrack is epic.
Soundtrack's
right?
off the hook, yeah.
Right? It is a hectic soundtrack. And I was going through it, going, every single one of these songs is absolutely
90s
bonkers,
royalty.
Right? 90s royalty is a great way of putting it. Look, the Nightmare by Brainbug, I love that song. It's such a good song, and it's such a 90s song, right? But Careless Whisper by Tamia, I know that you mentioned the other day, Adam, that you thought it was in a dog shit version of it.
Blasphemy.
I'm going to show you something about her, and it'll blow your mind later, okay?
Thanks. It's great for a podcast.
Yeah, anyway. So for trivia, Molly Shannon was in the original SNL skit that the movie was based on.
Good work.
So I went and actually deep dive and found the original skit, obviously with Jim Carrey in it, right? And Molly Shannon is actually one of the she's an extra in it, but she's the girl that basically gets that she's like, do you want to dance? And then this girl walks in, and she's the girl that gets bounced around between all three of them.
I'm surprised none of us did that as a memorable scene. The like opening of them like trying to.
Probably because they're just giant sex pests.
Yeah, they are giant sex pests.
This movie has aged pretty terribly.
And you know what?
They're
kind of real rapey.
Oh, yeah. Massively.
Creepy,
but like dumb rapey.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we...
Just idiots, pure idiots.
It's funny that we've been going for like 45 minutes and haven't touched on this, but yeah, a lot of the aspects of this movie have aged like horribly.
Yeah. I think, and you mentioned this before, but you take this, it's paper thin, right? You take it at face value. And one of the things, I think the reason why this movie works for me specifically is the fact that it's not a serious movie. The soundtrack is absolutely cracking.
So good. And the fashion is fucking hilarious.
Yes, it is. And the fashion hasn't stood the test of time.
Yeah.
So I guess the older the movie gets, the more ridiculous it gets to a certain
Beautiful.
Degree. But you add the cast to it on top of it, and everybody is just, it's an over the top movie that needed that. And I think it lands, right?
Yeah.
Well, then what'd you score it out of 5?
So for me, it was 3.5.
Wait. I haven't said my final thing.
Oh, okay.
They gave a total of $8.25 to the bouncer to get in.
What a bribe.
What a bribe.
Yeah. I can see why Michael Clark Duncan didn't let him in.
Fuck that shit.
Great person to get as a bouncer, though.
Yeah.
Ain't no one getting past him.
Mate, that voice.
Oh, he's the best.
Could melt butter.
Man.
Could
so
melt
sad.
Butter.
So sad.
All right, scores. I gave it 3.5.
I gave it 3.
What is wrong with me? 2.5.
Wow.
Josie.
I know.
I was expecting you to go at least a 4.
I thought I would be up there because I love this film.
You're turning into Lee.
I know. I'm such a savage. But I gave a 0 to plot and a 0 to ending.
Shit. So savage. What does that equal out of 15, Lee?
That equals 9.
9 out of 15. Oof. Okay. What did IMDb give it?
62% from memory.
And what is our percent
equal?
So 62. Yeah, 6.2 out of 10. And we gave it 60%.
Okay.
So we're close.
All right.
We're close.
Not the bad. Very nice.
We did pretty damn good.
If we had gone half a mark higher.
Oh, here we go.
No. Hang on. If we had gone half a mark higher legitimately and done 10 out of 15, we would have actually been over the average. So we're actually as close as we could have got it.
We are smashing.
We are as close as we could have got it.
How good are we?
Well. Yeah.
Anyway.
That 9.5 out of 15.
That is your worst joke and you're still doing it almost a year later.
My jokes are good, aren't they?
Anyway, look, this has been our episode all about Night of the Roxbury. This is a really fun movie. Whether it's aged terribly or not, the soundtrack has aged amazingly. It's a fun time as well if you're into that sort of shit. But this has been our conversation about it. It has been a hell of a lot of fun. Until next time, though, we want you to hit us up on the socials at 2GagPod. Give us a like on all platforms that play podcasts as well.
I know, I'm so bad. I'm always like, yeah, we're on Spotify. And then you're like, we're on all of them.
We're
like,
on everything. Yeah,
we are on everything.
Yeah, and we're on iHeartRadio.
And you know
Apple,
what?
We're on
podcasts might not work, but if you do see Josie, she likes CDs, remember?
I don't think my car even takes CDs.
But,
yeah, but
you
somebody
do.
Else. Yeah. That's right.
Okay, what a way to leave the fucking pod. This has been great. Thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, though. My name is Adam.
I'm Josie.
I'm Lee.
And this has been a night with 2 guys, a girl, and a movie podcast.
Bye.
Catch you later, guys. Thanks for joining us.